guess, as you could tell, I'm not Carrie Cantrell. Carrie couldn't make the talk. She had some obligations back at Florence, so she asked me to sub for her. She wrote the presentation. I went over it with her, but I'm bound to make some errors in there or not explain it fully, so I would ask for some patience towards the end. But we'll be talking about the distribution of energy in corn plants. Florence location here in the ARS was recruited among with seven other locations as part of the Sun Grant initiative to take a look at corn residue removal, for how long we can sustain that, how much residue we could take off the soil without the soils crashing. I am the PI on that project along with Jim Frederick, and Jim is handling the agronomic part, I'm handling the soils part. But we had sufficient funds to ask Carrie to do some thermal energy signature work of the corn residue. This was something new for the DOE's initiative, so we brought something new to the table. So we'll be looking at some of those results that Carrie has accumulated in her first year. The funds for this, again, are from the Sun Grant Initiative, which is from the Department of Energy. The study site is in Florence, South Carolina, at the PD Rec, Clemson University PD Rec. There was 20 plots established that are approximately 30 by 50 feet in size. Those plots were established based upon the size of our cutting head here to provide 12 30-inch rows, which are planted in April. The soils are typical coastal plain soils. We chose 5 stover removal rates, which you'll see that some other speakers in this session have done the same when they have been looking at the environmental implications of residue removal, 25, 50, 75, and 100%. Corn typically in our area is planted in March towards the end of the month or the beginning of April. Approximately 80 pounds of N was used in the first year of that. You'll see here a very interesting picture. During the month of June, we only had 0.02 inches of rain, so the crop looks a little stunted. We had to come in with approximately 3/4 of an inch of irrigation applied twice on this to be able to get a yield for that particular year. And you'll see here that we ended up harvesting with a putting a bean head on a traditional corn or harvester. The part of this project that Carrie contributed to was to start to look at the thermal energy signatures of the corn plant divided into several segments. We looked at the cob, which was taken off, the bottom, which is below the ear shank, the top portion, which included the cob, and then finally the whole plant at the V7 growth stage. We assembled our team. You see we would go into the each individual plot, cut these by hand to know how much we pulled out, put them in plastic that we conveniently called mummies, transported those mummies back to the Florence lab, opened them up. Don sitting in the office, sitting in the audience, my support scientist was responsible then for partitioning these corn stalks, grinding them, getting them prepared for the different analyses that was conducted. Some of our measurements included traditional yield here, the organic carbon and the total nitrogen in the particular year yields. We collected our residue, what we call the diaper method, which is essentially a cotton or a canvas suspended on the back of the combine here. This made it extremely difficult, but it was effective to capture that residue. You'll see the residue here in the bag. Carrie is an ag engineer with a specialization in measuring energy equivalents. So on her colorimeter here, she took and she put different parts of the corn plant into this colorimeter and ended up getting HHV numbers, higher heating values, which when I grew up were BTUs, but now it's the Joule system. So you'll see some of the data has been reported both ways. Additionally, we were concerned about the change in the plant chemistry during this experiment. We hypothesized that if there was some stress on the plant, there may be some differences in the cellulose, hemicellulose, and lignin production out of this corn, possibly due to changes in the soil tilth as a result of the loss of some of these nutrients. And as you're saying, one of the things that we need to be concerned about is when we pull this residue off the field, we are removing nutrients, particularly nitrogen, potassium, and calcium. This work was done, cooperated out to Dairy One up there in Ithaca. If we take a look at some of the traditional residue work that we collected in the first year, you'll see that we removed stover at 5 different rates. Here are the oven dry weights of that residue that was collected per plot, and that the amount that was returned. So essentially it's just the percentage of what we collected was returned to the plots. You'll notice that we had some standard deviations quite wide. That would probably attribute it to some of the differences in the soil drainage between those sites. Now, expressing some of the energy equivalents that Dr. Cantrell generated, you will see in the gigajoules that if you remove 100% of the residue, you can get approximately 87 gigajoules per hectare, which is equivalent to 82.4 mega BTUs. This is on a dry basis. And as you would expect, as you return or harvest less of that residue, you're getting a little bit less of the energy off because you're collecting less residue here. But another very important aspect from my point of view is the amount of organic carbon that's being taken out of the system. You'll see here that if you remove 100% of the residue, you're taking out 2,200 kilograms per hectare. Additionally, you're taking out of nitrogen out of the system. So right there you have a concern, are you going to be able to replace some of this nitrogen? Some of the other speakers, particularly Doug Carlin, has noted that if you remove the residue, you're also removing the other plant nutrients, which have to be taken into account when you're working on next year's fertilizer schedule. So the good news is that yes, we're getting some energy out of the system. We would like to end up this talk by talking a little bit about the plant distribution of gross energy in the corn crop. Carrie showed her results a number of ways. The first one here would be on one whole plant, you would get approximately 18 or 19 megajoules per kilogram. That is the whole corn plant. Now the cob, if you were to gather the cob itself, it would produce a little bit more energy than the whole plant. And again, that has to do with differences in the structure of the corn cob and also the denseness of that corn cob. So there's two good pieces of information. Now, as we are also noticing, the other speakers in today and yesterday were talking about harvesting the corn at different heights, particularly in Iowa. Carlin, working with the ag engineer there, can adjust the heights of their thing to decide if they're going to cut below the ear or corn cob or above that. So we also looked at that. If we were to harvest above the ear and below the ear, you could see that there's a little bit of energy difference in those two parts of the plant. Carrie also wanted to put this data in a bar graph to show the differences between the plant parts in terms of their thermal energy equivalents. This essentially is a rehash of what you saw on the other two slides, but what it's showing that if you can come in and just grab the cobs itself, you're doing quite well to get some energy out of that. And if you end up just harvesting the bottoms, the tops, you can see that there's a little bit of differences in there, but again, the cobs appear to be the most energy dense material. In terms of the structural carbohydrate concentrations, I wanted to be a little bit careful here because I am a soil scientist. I am not a plant physiologist that specializes in the ratio of these in here. But what I could tell you is that, yes, there was some differences in the cellulose and hemicellulose and the ash content in the different parts of the corn plant. Okay? She did the statistics and she did see some differences here. On the concluding slide, we will see some of the explanations for those differences. If you notice the distinct difference between the top gross energy of the top and the bottom portions, which is statistically linked to the differences in hemicellulose. The cob, as we mentioned, had greater energy contents compared to the whole plant or the bottom portion, which goes back to some of its structural makeup, the hemicellulose, and also some of the ash. And then we will be looking at future analysis. We'll then be looking for relationships between changes in changes in soil carbon, heating values, and the carbohydrate concentrations. We figure that by pulling these nutrients out of the system, we're going to be changing the ash contents, which probably then could be linked to differences in the energy equivalents that we'll be looking at in years 3, 4, and 5 of this project. That is our last slide, and I'll entertain any questions. Yes, sir.
When you look at that difference of 8,200 to 7,700 between the cob and some of the plant material, the other part of that equation that you need to account for in life cycle analysis is that, like on a per acre basis, it's going to take me a lot longer to get the poundage of cob than the poundage of
yes. biomass. Yes, that's true.
We need to figure that out.
But I would think from chatting with people, the cob right now could be one of the most desirable portions of the plant that you might be able to attract a higher amount of money per ton. Again, you like you say, there would be a life cycle analysis on that. I'm not an expert on LCA work, but I agree with you.
The present guy that's harvesting cobs is not paying very much for them. But the way the system is set up, it works to the farmer's advantage, but it's not a huge extra amount of dollars.
Okay. Are there any other questions? Okay, well, I thank you very much for your attention.